Here's Higdon. It sits up nicely for Michael Higdon. And what a start for Motherwell. But here's Malt, and he goes for it for Son. Magnificent Malt. Stephen Robinson celebrates. Motherwell, 2-1. Could that be the goal that puts him into the Betfred Cup final?
He's got Irwin. The supporting links from Ainsworth on the angle. Lionel Ainsworth fires home.
It's Lasley deep into stoppage time. Up goes Sutton. No foul given. Kerr. And Reid is there to knock it in. The goal is given. Hesitation for Craig Reid, who scores his first ever goal in senior football. And what a moment for Motherwell.
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. They say a week's a long time in football, and certainly there's been a lot happened over the last 8 days since we last recorded. Tonight I'm joined by Andy and Pepe as always, and we're also joined by a debutant. Gregor Sleeth joins us. Gregor, thanks first of all for coming on tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having us guys. It's nice to be here.
Andy, Pepe, how you doing guys?
I'm good, thanks. Cheers. Yourself?
Yeah, no complaints here. And Andy, I'm going to stick with yourself for the opener. We're 24 hours removed from a victory last night over Hamilton Accies, a victory that has secured the Premiership status for yet another year. It wasn't pretty. Accies went down to 10 men with about 10 minutes to go in the first half. We get the opener through Mark O'Hara, a well-worked goal, and we take all 3 points. It was satisfying to finally end that terrible run against Accies. Not done in the fashion we would have maybe hoped in the second half. We did have to grind it out somewhat. But overall, the feeling of relief after a difficult season that we're definitely safe.
That's it. That's certainly the aim whenever Alexander came in. And with a couple of edgy points along the way, but they have assured our status again for another season with, you know, 3 games to go, and as I'm sure we'll come on to still be in the cup in the quarter final stage. That's a pretty good return from them. In terms of last night, satisfying to get the win, and could have been so different if they'd have taken that chance right at the word go, but we kind of grew into the game, and we were certainly more assured of the two teams. We kind of wondered when we kind of discussed it tentatively last week whether the kind of pressure might get to Accies, and we said they certainly didn't look particularly threatening. A wee bit of a damp squib from them, and they kind of shot themselves in the foot. They were perhaps arguably fortunate to still have 11 men in the park at the point where their player was red carded. But once we kind of took advantage of that really quite quickly, and that kind of changed the course of the game thereafter. It would have been nice to have got the second and went on to play with a bit of kind of freedom. We ended up doing it in a fairly kind of controlled fashion, negative fashion, depending upon your viewpoint. I think ideally, when you're 1-0 up, you're against 10 men, you don't really want to see your kind of one of your strikers being withdrawn and bringing on another midfield player so you can kind of shore things up. But with what was at stake in terms of ensuring that we get the points, that ensured our safety, knowing the fact that we're light in numbers in terms of players for the kind of forthcoming Scottish Cup tie, then kind of fair enough. I can see why it was done, but kind of where it kind of felt you were kind of licking your lips almost at the opportunity that was there. It kind of felt was like, oh well, we got it done over the line, but not too much else beyond that.
Pepe, Graeme Alexander had an objective when he came in, and that was simply to keep the team in the league. He's done that, and despite the fact that we've talked on here week on week about performance levels not being quite what they should be, We're getting the job done. We're getting results. We can now look ahead to next season. Of course, we'll go on to talk about the Scottish Cup and the prospects there. But when Graham Alexander took over in January. His remit was keep the team in the league. He's done that with a bit to spare, and now with three league games to go, we could realistically look to finish seventh in the table, which was pretty much unthinkable 2 or 3 months ago.
As I've seen an interesting stat today that since Graham Alexander came in, the points that he's accumulated over this period of time, we'd be sitting in third in the league. So that alone speaks volumes. However, what I would say is that there hasn't really been a game that I've thoroughly enjoyed. He seems to be a master at grinding out results. I'm just a bit dubious about his substitutions. But overall, you can't complain. We're sitting really without any problems a lot earlier than what we thought, I think. If you go back to Christmas period, you really would have thought that we were in a dogfight. And we've really kind of coasted it over the last few weeks. It's really been one of the ones where, until it's mathematically impossible, we all kind of knew within ourselves that we probably had done enough, probably been the apparent word. But again, this isn't his team, so we need to wait and see how he goes. The substitutions have frustrated me. I thought against Morton, Jake Hastie looked as if he was up for it. He looked all right. We were playing against a lower league opposition. I know I said I would maybe give him another shot next season, and in reflection, maybe that was a bit ambitious or a bit absurd of me to say that, but he came on against Morton and did well. And I think what Andy said is absolutely spot on with regards to them being 10 men. They had to then go and chase the game to bring on Barry Maguire. I wanted to go and really hammer Hamilton. I mean, let's not forget it. The last time at Fir Park, they hammered us 4-0. I made an opportunity to do that, and it was just a boring watch. But as you've already alluded to, it's all about winning games. Could have brought Jake Casto on, it could have ended up 2 each, 1 each, whatever it is. But at the end of the day, he's getting the results, and if that continues next season, then it'll be all well and good.
Okay, you're not familiar with this podcast. It's my job to play devil's advocate, and I'm going to do that right away for your first question here. Pepe talks about the fact that we didn't go on and win the game convincingly. Could it be argued, though, that the result and the magnitude of the game was more important? You've got to kind of let Aki's run out of steam somewhat, and that's what happened in the final 10 minutes. They weren't creating anything where we were breaking away and had a few really good chances. I'm not saying that in any way that it was the most convincing victory we'll ever get, but I still feel it was fairly comfortable.
Yeah, I can understand where he's coming from, because if you think back to when they hammered us at Fir Park, we went down to 10 men and they didn't sit back, they went on to hammer us. So I can understand where he's coming from in that sense, and I feel the exact same. I feel like, you know, why not go and do it? But as you touched on, I think the thing that is represented by the points that Graham Alexander's brought in is he's kind of got that level head where he's thinking, what was at stake? Put all the rest of it to one side and just get the job done. And I think it was comfortable in the sense that we'd done enough to go over the line, but it got to the point where I think people were scared to get the ball down and play because of what was at stake. And it's quite ironic, because when Alexander came in, he insisted on his playing out from the back, but after like the hammerings from Aki's and St Johnson, now all it seems is if there's any sign of trouble, we just clear the ball, just first time down the channel. There was only really one good interchange towards the end of the game between like O'Hara, Campbell and Sod, but they kind of popped it about, and O'Hara dinked it in behind for Sod, and he got in behind. But apart from that, I think we had 3 shots on target with an extra man for pretty much the whole extra hour in that game. So I can understand where he's coming from, but I think the main thing to keep in mind is we got the job done, we're safe, and they might not be here to hammer next season, and that's a good thing that we've put them down, hopefully.
Andy, we spoke last week about the difficulties that some are experiencing trying to take to this Motherwell squad just now. And I think that there was a fair few detractors post-match yesterday who just thought it's not quite clicking, it's not quite what we want, not quite good enough. That isn't going to go away overnight, and it kind of feels like securing a Premiership future is the beginning of the end for some. The point where players are kind of told their future lies elsewhere, and we already are pretty well aware there's going to be massive, massive overhaul around the club during the summer months. Would you say that that's almost a kind of game to draw a line under what has been a really tepid season? Or is there still that feeling deep down that we could get the best out of these players somehow and go to Easter Road and win on Saturday, and suddenly you're only two games away from lifting our first Scottish Cup in 30 years?
Is there going to be as big an overhaul as everyone seems to believe? I mean, can I get back to the discussions that we had? The re-signing of Bevis and Robbie Crawford, and those were players that were the best ball in the world. But you would anticipated when, if you're going to clear the decks and start afresh, that those would have been the type of players that would have been most vulnerable for that. You know, you're out of contract players notwithstanding. So I don't quite know what we're in for. And again, I'm kind of going back to kind of something we said last week. It's a little perplexing when you look at the way the games have gone in many respects. The kind of some of the players that's in there, that the game of discussed that you would anticipate would have been players that, you know, a lot of people would have thought they would have been moved on. But somehow, by hook or by crook, we're on this successful run, a relatively successful run, a result. So, you know, he's certainly getting a tune out of them in most cases. So I've got no doubts that we can go to Easter Road and win. We've already done so. Now, granted, we're a few of the more creative players light, but, you know, when it comes to cup ties, you don't necessarily, as was illustrated perfectly against Morton, you don't necessarily need to have a sterling performance in there. It's about getting through at the end of the day, and there's absolutely no reason why we can't go, as we've kind of demonstrated by the way that we've closed games down and saw games out, that we can't go there and, if the worst came to the worst, have an utter shit fest through 120 minutes and do it in penalties again. So, you know, certainly, yeah, the players are there that can get the results that I've demonstrated. I'm interested to see. It's so intriguing to see what's going to happen in terms of what the squad is going to look like next season, how much of a turnaround there'll be by the time that we kind of kick off, or by the end of the transfer window.
Pepe, we'll go on and talk about that Scottish Cup tie against Morton. And I think that the derby almost came around too soon for some people last night, because they were still getting over a game that had happened five nights previously, where a game that we discussed in great length last week, that we were the Premiership side, we should be going into absolutely dominating, coming away with the result we require and booking a place in the quarterfinals fairly comfortably. Instead, the 90 minutes especially were beyond belief. The energy levels from Morton seemed tenfold to what ours were. The desire seemed tenfold as well. Got through, Stephen O'Donnell scores in the 119th minute. You think, right, okay, somehow we've managed to escape this. Then we still managed to lose a goal for a free header, despite bringing on a centre-half to shore things up for the last 60 seconds of play. It goes to penalties, and full credit to all the guys in claret and amber that stood up and took a penalty, because we scored 5 out of 5 and we go through. Liam Kelly again saving a penalty, which was very significant for us. If we go on to win the cup, we'll look back in that night and we'll laugh. I think we were laughing at full time as well, because the reality was we didn't deserve to book our place in the quarterfinals. Gus McPherson was rightfully gutted at full time that his side hadn't been able to capitalise on what was a terrible, terrible Motherwell performance. But just like we're saying about last night, it's all about the results, and by hook or by crook, we got there.
Pretty much reminiscent to the 91 game against Morton in both ties. we never really turned up, and I'm not going to use it as an omen, but at the end of the day, it's pretty much the same as what we're talking about with Hamilton, and even to an extent against St Mirren. We win by the goal, and Graeme Alexander seems to have a talent in managing out the game. Now, whether that be that when we're winning 1-0, you fling on the centre half. But we all know what I think of Beavis, and as soon as I seen him coming on, I thought, oh, please God, no. And then when the corner comes in, I'm thinking, oh, this is just disaster written all over it. And although it wasn't 100% his fault, he certainly didn't fill himself with glory. But at the end of the day, the important thing was that they had the mentality to step up, hit some really good penalties. We're confident that Liam Kelly would perform to the levels that he has, and almost single-handedly or been instrumental in the kind of good results. But I was not overly bothered about Morton's performance, to be honest with you, because although I didn't think they had that many great chances, I never felt that we're under the cosh here. I was just disappointed that we really lacked a bit of creativity. And I said earlier, until Jake Casey came on, you're going to think that I sound like Jock Brown about Barry Maguire with Jake Casey. I just feel that when he came on, there was a wee bit of spark there. He had that lovely ball through to Long. He had the one where he kind of hot into the ground. It was the old kind of adage of he almost looked as if he was trying too hard, but he did create that spark, and I felt sorry for him that he never got an opportunity against Hamilton to show us what I think he can do. But that's another point. But at the end of the day, we're in the next round. We go into this game completely different. We get into this game as underdogs, and I think it would be a completely different reaction if we absolutely jammied another 1-0 victory, like what we've did against St Mirren, what we did against, I don't mean we were lucky to win against Hamilton. We did deserve to win it, because they didn't really create anything, but the performance level wasn't up to it. But this game, the performance level to me doesn't matter against Hibs. It's the result that matters, and that's one thing that Graeme Alexander does seem to have created, is getting the team to win by whatever way possible, and that can only be a good thing.
Greg, I guess some of the lethargy in the later stages of the Rackies game could be put down to the fact that we had that extra half hour, and then the nerve-wracking experience of penalties as well against Morton. It just all felt a bit unnecessary, though. You look at Morton in the Championship, and you can't. The form book can sometimes go out the window in cup ties, but I think the reality was, if we played to anywhere near our level, we would have advanced fairly comfortably. But instead, we didn't even get dragged down to Morton's level. We were below Morton's level right from the start. We're very, very poor, and this is a team that constantly seem to be able to pull out one of these bad performances, sometimes out of nowhere. We went to Rugby Park when we were feeling quite confident and lost 4-1. We've had, obviously, the Ackies game, the St Johnston game at Firth Park. I don't know where it comes from, but it's an incredibly frustrating trait.
Yeah, I think I agree with you there. The midfield, for me, is where we should be dominating games, especially if we're going to be saying that Alexander can grind out results and stuff, and fans are getting frustrated that we don't go and dominate against Hamilton when we have an extra man, and we don't go and dominate against Morton when they're up, like, with all due respect to them, like, they're a team below us in the league. That's the type of games that you do want to go and dominate. So if you're not doing that, and, like, you're not doing that, I don't know what I'm trying to say. If you're not doing that when you should be, then how does that bode well for next season? Especially with the players, but the exodus of players. There's 19 out of contract for next season. We've got a squad of 33 in the midfield for next season at the moment. There's only four of them signed on: Mark O'Hara, Robbie Crawford, Barry Maguire, and Liam Donnelly. So at the moment, your three midfielders for next season are Liam Donnelly, Robbie Crawford, O'Hara, Maguire, and there's not much creativity in there at all. And I think that's what we've been lacking a lot this season. Obviously, Donnelly's not played this season, so Barry Maguire, Crawford, and O'Hara, there's not much creativity there at all. I think with the obviously with Tumble departing, Polworth's antics, the creativity has been something we've been lacking a lot, and I've been quite disappointed with Steve Lawless. I thought he would have got more of an opportunity. I thought he looked good in the game against Formerton, but and then he did get put into midfield for the next game and got hooked because it just doesn't suit him. I think creativity is definitely something for next season that we need to focus on, because without it, you're going to struggle to dominate any game.
When you look at guys like Maguire and Crawford, I think they're very much of a muchness, and they're not attack-minding players. They don't complement Alan Campbell particularly well either. I think we're quite often a wee bit soft in there.
I think the one positive that I took out of the Hamilton game right enough was the performance level of Mark O'Hara. He's so versatile, and sometimes that can be to a player's detriment, but I thought he played really well. He can play centre-half, he can play defensive midfield, he scored the goal. So I think he's a pivotal player for us. I think he's going to be a really important player next season. But I don't particularly rate Robbie Crawford. I don't rate Barry Maguire, and I'll probably have Jock Brown coming and smash my windies for saying that. But we definitely are just lacking in that area. Polworth isn't the answer. But I don't think we can look forward into next season and say, well, we can't even include Liam Donnelly. I think what we need to do is see what Alexander's philosophy is going to be when he's got a pre-season, who he wants to bring in, and then we can judge it. I hope that he's got an idea, and for all we know, the formation may change. And I think, for example, I agree with Gregor. I've been really disappointed with Lawless. You cannot judge him on the Formerton game at all. I mean, at the end of the day, that was a walk in the park for the players, and it should have been. But he's been really, really disappointing. He's meant to be that wee kind of creative spark. He's not had a chance, but when he has started games, I don't really know what position he would play. Is it part of a four in a midfield? Is it part of I'm not really sure. So he's been one that has been particularly disappointing. But maybe he just needs a pre-season to get fully fit, and he'll come out firing next year. So there is a bit of concern, but at the end of the day, we've done it before, and it's now up to Graeme Alexander to address that. This echoes everything that I've said over the last period that we've had, and I think we can have all agree with it, that I'm a wee bit concerned of the players that have signed on, because they were two that would be first out of the door for me, and Robbie Crawford and my big pal Beavis. I just don't see how that's going to improve from the performances we've seen this season, taking that into next season, and that's my concern. Is that that's the caliber of player that the new manager is looking to take on.
I feel like I didn't really articulate my point very well there. I was more kind of saying, in terms of Crawford and Maguire, I don't believe they offer a massive amount going forward. I don't believe they shore up the midfield either. Neither.
I think Barry Maguire does. I think Maguire shores up the midfield.
He's tidy enough, and Crawford's tidy enough as well. But they're not going to fly into tackles. They're not going to burst forward. Like, Mark O'Hara was a breath of fresh air yesterday because he was advancing and linking up with the forward players. I don't think either Maguire or Crawford shore up the defence, and they don't provide much going forward. Barry Maguire had his fantastic ball for the goal against Ross County that started the move for the goal against Ross County up at Dingwall. But I think it's very rare that we get flashes of any sort of attacking intent from Barry Maguire and Robbie Crawford. I think if you go back to about 18 minutes into the Accies game and his attempting goal there, shows you exactly the attacking qualities that Robbie Crawford has. So it's just...
I think the easy way for me to answer that is,
See, if you go back 10 years, I wouldn't have Barry Maguire or Robbie Crawford as first picks in any teams in the last 10 years.
A bit of that's forced, though, Pepe, in terms of Crawford and Maguire wouldn't be in the same team at the same time if it wasn't for the deluge of injuries that we've had. But that being said, you had Sam Foley on the bench yesterday, who I believe plays as a central midfielder as well. Yeah, and remember, Alan Campbell had went off late on against Morton previous night, and you still don't bring Foley into the reckoning. So that shows you how far away he is from pushing for the first team. And of course, that could be argued that Alan Campbell is the first name in the team sheet, so you're going to do everything you can to make sure he starts. But he's played an incredible amount of games, even in the last 4 years. The amount of games that Alan Campbell has missed, you could possibly count in one hand. So he's such an integral part to the team. But I just don't think either of them, while they're not, there will be standouts for criticism at Motherwell, and that's because they don't do anything remarkable and they don't do anything fancy. But at the same time, I couldn't really pinpoint much of the stuff they do wrong either. They're just, for me, especially in the case of Crawford, just not good enough.
I totally agree, and I've said that, and having the two of them in the same midfield, having the same flaws and the same concerns, for me, is a major concern, which Gregor's kind of alluded to. But I think going forward, we need to wait until we see how the season, pre-season team signings shape up, and then we can judge it for there.
We'll move on and talk about the Hibs game on Saturday. It's a 5 o'clock kickoff, live in Premier Sports. So those of you that don't already have that channel, you get to have another subscription. But Andy's already pointed out, and I think he's on commission for Premier Sport, that you will get the run into La Liga and Serie A and a few other leagues as well into the bargain, if you like the egg chasing as well. I believe that's covered in great depth. And Andy, we'll start with you on the game. Hibs aside in good form and looking pretty much nailed on for third spot in the league this season. But we could go there with a fair degree of confidence. We've not lost a goal at Easter Road in our matches there so far this season. The last meeting coming in March, and it was a very good 2-0 victory. That said, we'll have to go there without Jordan Roberts. We'll have to go there without Tony Watt, two players that were integral in that victory back in March. It's a game that I'm really looking forward to, but I don't really know why, to be honest. I feel that the magic of the Cup has somewhat been removed by the fact that fans aren't there. The season as a whole has been long, and while I've kind of enjoyed the escape for a couple of hours, more often than not, I've kind of found myself pretty depressed at the end of it. But it's just an opportunity. If anything can happen in that 120 minutes, as the Morton game showed, is a really good example of cup football being so unpredictable. We've got a chance in this game, and if we win this game, we're in the semi-final of the Scottish Cup, and who knows what can happen at that point. So I've answered my own question. That's why I'm excited. Why are you excited about it?
Well, I was just going to say, you just answered the question there yourself as well. But no, it's a nice diversion away from the concerns that we've had in the league. It's different. It's like, it has a, if you're old enough to remember the kind of the Skull Cup, as it was when they rebranded the League Cup in the mid-80s, it was basically a kind of snappy competition in that you basically played pretty much every other midweek, and the final was kind of done and dusted before the end of October usually, and the competition kind of has that kind of feel about it, progressing through the rounds very quickly now that it's underway. And well, as you say there, we're kind of almost potentially 90 minutes away from a semi final, so that has its excitement factor there. You know, straight away. In terms of the game itself, kind of there is a kind of an element of freedom or relaxation kind of going into it to some extent when you're the underdogs. And Hibs will be, you know, being the home side, given the fact that they've, you know, done pretty well this season, sitting third, look as if they're going to get that kind of sewn up. But there's been instances in the past where we've had those good seasons where we've been sitting maybe second or third, and other teams have come. You know, I remember Aberdeen doing us a couple of seasons in a row in the Cups where we were pretty much one of the kind of dominant teams in the country at the time. So there's nothing to be scared of, particularly in light of the fact that we went there only 5 or 6 weeks ago or whenever it was and got a result against them. So, you know, it's one to look forward to. No concerns now about league position. You can just concentrate on this. There's the concerns there with the fact that, you know, Roberts was pretty influential, obviously, with scoring in the last game. He expects to be absent. One of the few creative sparks within the team, Tony Watt, looks as if he's not going to be there either. So it looks as if it's going to be one of these more kind of regimented, functional kind of displays that we'll need to turn in. But we've proven fairly adept at doing that over recent weeks. So that shouldn't give us a concern. It'll be interesting to see what Hibs do, how they approach it. Kind of the way that we've set up under normal circumstances would be that you would anticipate that we would look to capitalise on a team coming towards us, but without having those kind of players, those aforementioned players, we don't know how it's going to be. Will we have that same kind of spark going forward? Will we have the kind of the pace, the necessary pace to sort of capitalise if we're kind of defending and breaking? So it's an interesting matchup to see how the teams approach it. But, you know, we go there. See, Hibs are favourites. Pressure's on them, but absolutely no reason why we can't go and get a result. And hopefully by the end of the weekend, we'll find ourselves anticipating the semi-finals.
Greg, I think Andy's right. The job's been done in terms of the league, and Graham Alexander's objective has been achieved. So now the next couple of games are really just to pressure off the players that have got an opportunity to show what they can do. But if they get the job done on Saturday, they've got the chance to somehow go on and be legends of this football club.
Yeah, obviously the season pretty much finished in terms of the league. Saturday's a free hit for the ones that included in the first team that play every week. It's a free hit for them. Like, Hibs were favourites last time, they were flying last time, they dominated the game last time, but we won 2-0. So Hibs are flying this time, they're favourites this time, so maybe we'll win 2-0 again. I think they should just go with no fear. I know, you know what's going to happen. Hibs will get the ball, we'll sit in, and hopefully people will get on the ball a bit more. And when we do, I'd like us to see, try and hit it to feet more, because there's so many times in Aki's game that nobody was coming in and getting the ball off the fullback. So anytime Sod did take a touch or McGinley took a touch and he looked up, and nobody of the three centre mids, or even before, after we took our striker off, nobody was coming to feet and getting the ball. That's the reason we just kept punting the ball up the park. Nobody was brave enough to come and get it. And if you're going into a quarter final when it's pretty much your last game of the season, you're going to need players to be brave, because after this it's done. You can go on your summer holidays, you play some of the youth for the last game. So we need people to be brave if we have any chance, because we're not going to see the ball. So when we do, we need to actually do something with it.
Pepe, where would you say the game will be won for Motherwell on Saturday? Who's the guys that can step up and make a big impression? For me, guys like Chris Long are going to be really, really important. He's had a glaring chance against Morton that he hit the post with. Had another frustrating night last night where he ended up getting subbed before he was sent off. But with Tony Watt out, for all the world, you would go with Devante Cole and Chris Long up front. These guys, when they get their opportunities, it's going to be so crucial that they take them.
Yeah, but I think the important thing that, in particular your point about Chris Long, is that he has been playing more in his favoured position. And for me, he just really hasn't taken any of the chances. He's had a few decent chances and it's just no come off for him. So this is a time where if anything's going to happen, I think it's going to be him that's going to turn the game. He has got that in him. Going back to the cup tie just before the whole lockdown at Dundee that night, he looked like a completely different player and to what he is now. All it takes is one to hit off him and in the back of the net, and before you know it, we're in the semi-final. I don't know if I like the partnership along in Cole. I always feel as if Cole's drifting out wide. And also be interesting to see the formation. I think the formation is going to be really important. So obviously he changed the formation for Aki's playing the three centre halves at the back, which gave O'Donnell and McGinley that wee bit more attacking emphasis in their game. So it'll be interesting to see if he sticks with that certainly at the outset of the game. But I really think Chris Long, I don't mean he owes the support or owes the club anything. I think this is a time where if he's going to win over the fans, if you like, is a good way of putting it, then this is the perfect time to do it, isn't it? And just on what I was saying there as well, I've been quite impressed with McGinley over the last few weeks. I think he's defensively looked pretty decent. And I think even going forward, he's put a few decent balls in. And he seems to have overtaken Jake Carroll and kind of making that position his own. I've been quite impressed with him. I'm not saying he's going to be the match winner, which was your main point, and I'm drifting away again. But I just wanted to get that in. I've been really surprised with Jake Carroll coming back, getting the kind of relatively long-term contract. Pretty sure McGinley's out of contract. Is this another sign that he might be staying? Because Alexander seems to... Well, has he got another year? He's been, I think he's been pretty decent over the last few games, so you never know. But I think, going back to your original point, say anybody can be the match winner in a game like this. Do you know what I mean? We've not got a Stevie Kirk or a David Cooper like the 91 game, but it's there for somebody to become a legend, as you've already said, to start that cup. And again, I've just got a feeling that we might just go there and sneak another wee 1-0, and before we know it, we're looking forward to a semi-final.
We don't normally do this and steer away too far away from Scottish football or in particular Motherwell, but it seems that it's quite necessary to do so given the events in football this week with the proposal for a European Super League. There was a story that broke on Sunday morning with 14 teams planning to break away. The great and the good of English football, Spanish, Italian. It was all happening, and the rest of us were going to be left behind. Didn't particularly affect Scottish football, of course, with none of our clubs being invited to the party, but there was obviously going to be an effect should this come into play. Quite rightly, the fans were up in uproar, and they very much made their feelings clear right from the off. High-profile characters, the likes of Gary Neville, Jamie Carragher, very outspoken on the matter. We'll go into some of the irony of that a bit further down the line, I'm sure. But by Tuesday, this idea seemingly dead in the water. The clubs, one by one, pulling out. I think there is a few still left at the table. But this idea of 14 teams kind of breaking away from the rest of world football and being these superpowers to a different level, where they were already very, very rich and very, very dominant in their respective leagues, with the exception of Tottenham and Arsenal, of course. The thought of them getting more power and more money and taking more from the game while the rest of us feed off the scraps. Andy, it was a baffling kind of couple of days. The conversations had obviously went on for quite some time behind the scenes. It's quite clear that all 14 of these owners wanted a part of this. It was completely against the spirit of the game, for starters. There was no relegation. It was by invite only. It just, all of it was stinking. It was a horrible, horrible thing. Absolutely ripping what was left of the soul of football at that level away. Fair play that the fans did get their message across. I think that it emphasised player power and manager power as well. The fact that the likes of Jurgen Klopp quite clearly coming out and saying, I don't want this, but it's not my decision. There's people higher up than me making these decisions. Clubs with real proud tradition, the likes of Liverpool and Man United, breaking away from their own leagues, or at least trying to kind of accept their dominance to a different level. It takes away that level playing field that we absolutely love about football. We love the fact that West Brom can go to Anfield and get a result. We love the fact that a Brora Rangers, if we're going to take it into a Scottish context, can come up against a full-time side in Hearts, a really famous club in Hearts, and come up in the right end of a result. It was really concerning, and I don't think for a second that we've heard the end of this. These proposals have been going on for years and years, and ideas like this, going back to things like the Atlantic League and things like that, have always reared their heads. When it came to Rangers and Celtic, I think quite a lot of us said, well, okay, go, we'll catch you later on. But for the greater good of the game, things like this do kind of strip away the things you love about football. It was great to see it fail, but it's concerning that that was an idea in the first place.
It's not a surprise. I mean, it's been, the kind of clubs have been kind of edging towards this slowly for years, decades. I mean, how far do you go back? I mean, you can go back to the, you know, the kind of the evolution of the Champions League. When you go back, when you take away the old, however many teams, when it was actually just champions that were in the European Cup, that they all went in there, and if there was a potential for a Real Madrid, Barcelona in the first round, if one of them had won it the previous season and they drew against the Spanish champions, or you had a Man United against, you know, Ajax or whatever in the first round, then so be it. That's what it was. So, I mean, it's been getting carved up ever since then. And you remember the kind of farcical scenarios where you'd like two group stages going way back in the Champions League to try and get towards this kind of halfway house between a kind of European league and, you know, keeping that a cup competition. So this has been in the making, and more as the competition and the kind of top end, the top sides in Europe have made more and more money, so they aspire to do so. And I think ultimately they'll get a certain amount of the way along the road, because UEFA obviously they've been buoyed by, I think, the response that they've had, but they'll know full well that if they don't react to it in some degree, then it'll only delay it until however long down the line again, and they'll have another stab at it. And you can kind of look at it and see that these things are to a smaller extent have happened across the kind of continent as well. You really need to get back to the kind of formation of the SPL, whenever they kind of broke away from the Scottish Football League, the creation of the Premiership or Premier League or whatever it was called, whenever they kind of broke away from the Football League in England as well. So, you know, it's a much smaller scale, but, you know, these kind of aspirations of teams to sort of carve up the money, and, you know, they'll justify it through their own means. Undoubtedly the same way as your Florentino Perez and the likes have tried to do in terms of this venture. But well, I've no doubt that there will be some sort of adaptation of the competition going forward to try and pacify the teams as much as possible, and whatever comes of the next agreement, some, you know, I'm sure there'll be movement. I see. I've got kind of in terms of the kind of fans, it was quite surprising some of the reaction that it actually generated. But it's to a lot of their credit that they did so. A lot of them could have taken the attitude that, well, let's just do a kind of confirms our preconceptions that we're at the elite end and we deserve to be in such a competition. But, you know, good to see it flounder, but I think there'll be there'll still be things that will come from it that might not necessarily be to our liking.
Greg, he makes a really good point there. It does feel like almost, despite the fact this is now dead in the water, this has certainly been a power play by these very rich clubs where they're almost kind of, they're making the demands and they're kind of demonstrating what they could do, which may be a warning for those that run the games in England or the likes of UEFA, who will be putting up a very high price on the participation of these clubs in their competitions.
Yeah, can I just say before we go into it, I think I speak for all of us. I've never been prouder to be part of a fan-owned club, especially after the events of like the last week or so. It just highlights how important fan ownership in football is and should be to all people, that these billionaire owners who probably never even go to, they don't go to the games anymore, they're just faceless entities that own football clubs, think it's okay just because Real Madrid, Barcelona and hundreds of millions worth of debt, that they should be able to break away to a league with no consequences and make all this money back to clear their debt, as and then have the cheek to say that they're saving football. It was disgusting, and it goes completely against everything football stands for. I mean, Liverpool, Manchester United especially, I was shocked when I seen their names on it. They were born through factory workers, railroad workers, dockyard workers, like from socialist cities, and they just decided that it would be okay to bugger off to this league with no consequences just to make more money. It was just baffling, and like I said, I've never been more proud to be part of a fan-owned club, because it's, and what you're saying, I don't think it will go away. The page, the document was like 740 odd pages long, so they didn't make it overnight. They've been plotting and scheming this in the darkness for years probably, and I think that speaks volumes of itself, that they knew it wasn't a good idea, because if it was a good idea, why didn't they just like propose it to everyone and like have a round table discussion at it? But even Jurgen Klopp came out and says he didn't hear about it till the day before he got asked about it. He found out at the same time as everyone else, and he's a manager of the football club. But yeah, I think it's ironic of that UEFA and stuff should be hailed as like the saving face of football, because they're the reason this happened. They invited all these people to the party. Like, what did you expect was going to happen? You invited rich billionaires to the Premier League. Like, what did you think was going to happen? Do you think they were just going to settle for the money that they had? When people have that much money, they don't just stop. They want to get more and more. And I think it was testament to the German clubs as well that they stood by the 50+1 rule and just stood up against it, especially RB Leipzig, who have came under criticism in the past for trying to get a loophole around that fan ownership, and they've obviously got a lot of money pumped into them, but even they stood strong and realised it was the wrong thing to do. But yeah, I agree with you. I don't think it's going to go away. This is probably just the start of it, and definitely stay vigilant, because these people, they should be driven out of the game, and until they are, I think we can only expect more.
The Super League isn't going ahead, no, but these people are still at the helm. All football clubs are run as businesses. That's a given. But the fans are meant to be the lifeblood of a football club. You would think that a manager, and I keep on referencing Jurgen Klopp here, and I think that's not in a Gary Neville sense of the way where I thought he kind of threw him under the bus somewhat. But in terms of Jurgen Klopp been put in front of the Sky cameras before the game against Leeds on Monday night, and he's saying he didn't know a great deal about it, but he was completely against it. He's thinking that's a man that brought success to Liverpool after all those years, and the owners still are willing to go behind that man's back and move them to something that they know that the manager would be completely against. And it just shows you that these people are, they're snakes. They don't care. They don't care about you or I as supporters. They don't care about the players. They don't care about the staff. They just generally are caring about the bank balance and nothing else. They do not have any passion for the game. They don't have any love for the game. They see it as a means to an end. And as that continues, then football is going to end up in absolute shit. And don't get me wrong, I enjoy English football, and I'm not ashamed to admit that I would say I follow Tottenham as much as I can. I've had the opportunity to go to quite a number of games, but they and I love watching them. I love watching them. Not the football as much, but when they get a result once in a blue moon, it is very, very enjoyable. I feel more of a disconnect though now than ever. Obviously, being based in Glasgow while they're in London, it doesn't really help the situation. But that's not football. That's just kicking the soul completely out. It's a disregard for everyone who supports these teams, and it's sort of heartbreaking. And I know we're talking about this at length in a Scottish football podcast, where perhaps we wouldn't have been affected as much initially, but you can bet your bottom dollar that after the Super League had taken off, the next part between the Super League 2 and the Super League 3, and suddenly you are getting teams like Rangers and Celtic going away, and the interest waning from a future generation. We risk the future generation being lost to football through doing this. Because, you know yourself, as a father of a young boy, do you think Ben's head would be turned by watching Liverpool versus Real Madrid, Barcelona, even the likes of Man United every week? Or would his interest remain with Motherwell versus Dundee United? I think it'd be very hard. And that's someone that's been brought up going to the football week in, week out. The potential fans would have been lost. It's a relief in it. Well, it didn't affect Scottish football directly. I think in many ways, in many strands, we were affected by that last week.
I think Scottish football, to a Motherwell level, was affected. It's almost, you can draw comparisons of Rangers and Celtic always wanting to jump down to the English game. Financially, it would maybe be not the best thing for Scottish football, but overall, it would maybe make it a bit more competitive and a bit more enjoyable up here, because let's be honest, I don't think in my lifetime there'll be another team who'll win it out with Rangers and Celtic. And when you looked at the teams that were left, it actually made it a wee bit more interesting. So some of them would have been like, aye, fair enough, on you go. But from a Liverpool point of view, obviously, as it's been alluded to, I'm a member of the Glasgow Reds Liverpool Supporters Club, and there's a large number of that, well, pre-COVID, meet up for every single game in Glasgow, watch the game together, and we've got group chats and Facebook pages and stuff, and not one fan wanted this going forward. Now, what I think is important is that, obviously, Liverpool owners, American, I think it just shows you the total disconnect from the powers that be now. They just don't grasp that teams like Liverpool, and I hate to say Manchester United, these are still community clubs that have been successful, and they've still got fans that this is their life, and they don't grab that aspect. Now, that's what's the beauty of supporting a team like Motherwell. Now, really, fundamentally, it didn't matter. Now, you asked a really good question about my boy. Now, I'm really lucky that my boy is 10 and he's absolutely football daft. Motherwell, Liverpool, Scotland. But when it comes down to it, I think he realises the special bond that being part of the Motherwell community, Motherwell, whatever you want to say, you feel closer to a club like Motherwell than what you'll ever do with Liverpool. And that kind of I had a wee chat with him to get his viewpoint on it for a 10-year-old boy. He didn't really understand it. He just thought it was like them thinking they were better than everybody. And if anything, it's probably turned his head a wee bit to realise that football is important. And it's, he then seen that teams like, obviously I love Liverpool, but he then seen that money was dictating how Liverpool were operated. And I think he couldn't quite grasp that. And then when I always take him back to the cup run where we had the semi final and the final, and we went back to Firth Park, and he's standing having a conversation with Cedric Kipre. That's football. That is what is important. That you're then mixing with your own. There's fans that you know that pre-match that you just know their face, but you're talking to them. That would never happen in a world like that. One other point just on it, and this will probably sound, you're just trying to get at Liverpool. I thought Jordan Henderson did really well on it. He obviously had a meeting with the captains, and then they all came out and didn't want to. So fair play to the players as well. The Leeds players before the Liverpool game had the shirts on. So I think across the board, it sent a pretty clear message, and I don't think it will come back. I think they've now seen that the fans are the most important part of the game, and I hope now that things maybe do need to change a bit. For me, if somebody said to me, what would you do to rectify it? I'd go back to the old school, as we said. Champions League as the champions. I mean, Liverpool have won it twice. Not ever been champions in England if we won the European, the Champions League in 2005, or when we beat Spurs a couple of seasons ago. Should be the champions. It should be the champions. Then UEFA Cup, Cup Winners' Cup. Go back to that. Knock out. Get rid of all this group stage, and it'll still be exciting. Then you could get a team that you never know could just come through and get to the final. I mean, you just need to look back to before your guys' time, but Andy will remember when Dundee United playing Barcelona. You know what I mean? We're totally in a different world now. And unfortunately, it's because it's a business and it's not it's not football anymore. But sport and Motherwell is, and that's the main difference.
We've made a lot, I believe that there's been a lot of good points made there. Certainly, Greg and Pepe, it's so clear how much this has affected us in the last week. And Andy, I think, kind of, you'll possibly forgive me for saying it, it's just the kind of almost, it becomes a cynical point where we just go, why are we surprised by this? And that's kind of the really sad thing, how the game has progressed in recent times. And it'll be very interesting to see if there's almost a kind of a change in the structure, especially in European football, where I think these teams have protected themselves, and I think that they will be afforded luxury like they've never had before, and it's just quite frankly not deserved. But that's where we are just now, and it'll be interesting to see how things play out over the next couple of months and then the couple of years that follow.
Andy, just quickly, did you see what Florentino Perez said about the length of the games, that they should consider shortening the games? It wasn't that long ago that we were talking when the Americans were coming in about timeouts and trying to change the size of the goals. I just found that the most ridiculous comment. Let's change make the game shorter, because people don't have the attention span to watch an 80-minute game of football. And that's a guy that's in charge of bloody Real Madrid. You're like, oh. For me, that's when it was the heads gone. It was an absolute shocker. What's going to be next? That we'll just make it there's no offside, and it's just ridiculous.
You on safe for half time show?
Well, it's just actually broken in Twitter that Real Madrid have completed the signing of Bevis Mugabe for €40 million. So there you go. That was what was next. I was going to go on and talk about Sky Sports and the fact that all Premiership games on pay-per-view next season. I'm going to leave that until the next episode, because we've got a wee bit of time to go over that, but we're round about the hour mark just now, so I'm going to wrap it up just now. Gregor, first of all, thanks to yourself. Thank you very much for coming on, and please, anytime you fancy it in the future, please come back.
Yeah, guys, thanks very much. I've really enjoyed it. Anytime you want me, I'll be here.
Pepe, Andy, thanks as always, guys.
No problem.
Cheers, Andy.
As always.
Cheers, Gregor.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back midweek following Saturday's Scottish Cup tie against Hibernian. Until then, thank you and goodbye.